Thank you for joining us. This is the inaugural episode of Life and Jiu-Jitsu. I am your host, Gibran Maciel. We are sponsored by me. We are funded by me. Episode one, we've got Matt Betzold here. Matt Bonebreaker, Legbreaker Betzold.
Legbreaker.
Yeah, yeah. And I think we're just going to chat a little bit about... Well, let me back up. The idea for the podcast... is to share some of the insights that that have come to me through martial arts, and that I believe that have come to a lot of people through martial arts. It's more than just self-defense, I think. I've learned a lot about life. I've learned a lot about myself, and I've learned a lot about I guess just how to better myself through martial arts, and you know. I'll probably be able to articulate this better as we go on. So, thanks for joining us, episode one. We've got Matt here, and we're just gonna get right into it. Just to, by way of introducing myself, again, Gibran Maciel, resident of Sacramento, came up here about 7 years ago. That's roughly when I started training under Dustin Akbari with Team Alpha Male, and we're actually teammates. Right?
Yes.
Lifelong martial artist, been wrestling for about, I wrestled for about 8 years in high school and college, and picked up grappling in 2007. So I guess it's been about 15 years of martial arts experience in both disciplines. Been boxing for a little while too. Not much of a fighter, to be honest. Had one MMA fight, enjoyed it, won, realized it wasn't for me shortly afterwards. And that's about it. Matt, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
I am Matthew Betzold, or Matt Betzold is what my friends call me. My fight name is Legbreaker. I am a father first, fighter second, obviously. Many other titles, those are the most important ones that come to mind. I'm just a practitioner of all combat sports, specialize in ground fighting for sure, and I moved to Sacramento about 4 years ago from Phoenix, Arizona, and dropped everything I know out there to come and follow my dream to become a professional mixed martial arts fighter and get the best training in the world. That's what.
Is that what you moved here? Is that what you moved here for, to train at TAM?
Yes, that is why I moved here, and.
So you just picked up your stuff and moved here.
Well, yeah, it took me about a year of playing. I came out here in 2012. I trained for like 3 weeks, and then I went back and realized, you know, that's where I needed to be. My other gym was closing down, and I didn't really want to go to the other gyms in the area. I felt that politics would be affecting my growth and all that, so I chose to find a new home, Sacramento.
Okay.
And, yeah, okay. The training partners is what got me out here. I wanted to train with the best 135ers and the best flyweights, and I felt Team Alpha Male was a good choice. You know.
You know, you're not the only guy to sell everything and move here to train with Team Alpha Male. I mean, Jarrell, right? He's from Alaska. Just came here to fight.
Birds in a feather flock together, man. You gotta be the best. You wanna be the best, you gotta train with the best. And
yeah, so I guess
their style was perfect for how I was trying to fight.
Yeah, yeah. Just
grinding.
Just grinding. Grinding
him with the elbows.
Just jab and grab.
Yeah.
Jab and grab to the ground, pound them out.
Yeah, that okay. Throw one bomb, take him down. You're in my world now. Yeah, I figured that was.
So you're primarily, you would say, a jiu-jitsu guy.
Yeah, I mean that's where I'm looking to get it every time. Everybody knows that.
So. Okay. How long have you been grappling for? How long have you been doing jiu-jitsu for?
I've been training, wrestling, and boxing my whole life, off and on. But that was more so because my brothers did it.
Okay.
I found it for myself when I was about 17. And that was the year 2001. September 2001 is when I first went into a jiu-jitsu school. And I fell in love with jiu-jitsu, and I got good at jiu-jitsu before I got good at wrestling. But I did wrestle and box before I did anything. And it was just because I looked up for my brother. You know, all my brothers did it, so.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I want to try it. And then just to try it. I always looked up to Mike Tyson, Bruce Lee, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Chuck Norris, you know.
Yeah.
I hate to say it now, even Steven Seagal.
Steven Seagal gets a lot of flack. Steven Seagal gets a lot of flack. He's kind of become a caricature of himself, right? He's sort of like that old school martial arts sensei that you kind of got to bow to, and you know he taught Anderson Silva the kick that he knocked out Vitor Belfort with. You know, it's cut out, take it. So, yeah, I mean Seagal, you know, I am reluctant even to admit that at one point I definitely looked up to Steven Seagal. Under Siege, man? Oh my god.
I looked up to him, but I never looked up to the way he ran. I mean, come on, bro.
He can't run. He runs like a white boy.
No, even as a kid, I made fun of how he ran, so we'll just say that.
For those of you that haven't seen it, check out Steven Seagal running GIF. It's ridiculous. I mean, he just, you know, he's not coordinating that way. He's got to have some of the most ridiculously impressive hand speed, though. His hands, like when he starts flowing with his hands, it's pretty impressive, actually. I doubt there's very much power in any one of those strikes, but he can really flow with his hands. He's pretty good at that.
Wrist control game is not a fantasy, that's for sure. It's a reality.
Yeah.
It's easy to defend. And,
yeah.
But,
you know, actually, you know, when I think about...
Whatever works for him. Got him lots of things, I'm sure.
I do have to wonder about, like, Aikido in particular. I would put most of Aikido in, like, you know, in the category of perhaps would not pursue in an MMA fight. But I'm sure there's got to be one or two wrist locks out there that if you get them down real good.
I will say this. Sometimes when you're having trouble getting the Kimura, the guy's strong or whatever.
And the wrist lock's right there.
The wrist lock gets him to bend it so you can attack the Kimura. So sometimes I used a little bit of it, you know?
Yeah. The wrist lock off the Kimura is powerful.
Like Bruce Lee said years ago before us all were even born, you know what I mean? You gotta take a little from everything, you know? Don't discard anything. You
can't discard any of it.
Anything, no.
You know, I'm glad you talked about that. So, guys, this is, you know, life in jiu-jitsu. We're gonna cover it all, but, you know, we're gonna talk some fighting too, so just, you know, I think just be comfortable with that fighting generally, prize fighting, mixed martial arts, old school martial arts, and jiu-jitsu, of course. Now what was I saying?
Talking about taking a little from everything.
Yeah. You know, so I felt like when MMA first got started, maybe like the first couple generations of MMA, it was sort of like a working assumption that really like wrestling and boxing and Muay Thai and Jiu-Jitsu were kind of like the basic framework for how to fight intelligently. And that was maybe like two or three generations of fighters later, people started standing just a little bit further apart. And that's when Taekwondo really came into the game. You know, I mean, you got a guy like Anthony Pettis, who just wants just a little bit more space so he can fire off those Taekwondo style kicks. Luke Rockhold with the question mark kick up the middle and then kind of swiveling up over the side. You know, you can't do that if you're kind of in each other's chests like we're boxing or wrestling, you know. So I feel like as the game has evolved, the traditional Eastern martial arts, which at first we were kind of like, that Taekwondo stuff doesn't work. Oh, that karate stuff doesn't work. As the game gets more and more refined, those techniques are starting to find their way into the game. You know, especially a lot of those kicks, you know.
Unorthodox styles are definitely, you know, effective if trained enough, you know, and then the high numbers and high repetitions.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. I mean, anything, you're just seeing these guys just practice different stuff and look outside the box.
Yeah.
That's all it is, you know?
So, you come here to train, you realize that this is where I need to be. You move here. How long did it take?
You make it sound so easy.
Yeah, I know, right?
You just move here.
It'll take a while for the team to accept you, to like get used to the training protocol here. I mean, it's not easy to train with these guys. Right? I mean, Team Alpha, I mean, these are the best in the world, man.
I mean, I'm still gaining acceptance every day. You know, I just, I think they all accepted me, you know, or not all, but the right people accepted me.
Sure.
I wouldn't have found myself there.
Sure, sure. And you're just getting comfortable in the city, trying to figure out where you are, like
trying to find, you know, my niche. Just, you know, it's just trying to gain more skills, and it's weird because every time I go to a new gym, it's gotta, I gotta prove myself again, you know? So yeah, it did, I did have to prove myself to the gym, mm-hmm. to be worthy to train there.
Sure, sure.
You know, they don't just let anybody train there.
No. Well, you know, you're right, they just opened up a new school. It's over at, I think 6500 block of Folsom Boulevard, Ultimate Fitness. Now the Ultimate Fitness as a gym and as a fitness martial arts academy is open to anybody. Great new facility, right? I mean, it's pristine. It's
yes.
gorgeous. But, you know, I think what we're talking about here is, you know, training with the professional team, a little bit more of a higher caliber demand of the fighter and the athlete who's going to come and do that. You said your older brothers, you know, got you into martial arts and got you into that idea. And I had to pause and think a little bit. Eric Maciel, if you're out there listening, tune in, all right? Eric, I'm going to have to share this with him. He was my older cousin. He's older by maybe 5 or 6 years. And, you know, when I was a kid, I would hang out a lot at my Uncle Gustavo's house and with Eric. And Eric, man, I just looked up to him, like, he was just so cool. And he was so cool. He was so big and strong, and he was effortlessly cool. You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't trying to be cool. He was just fucking cool. And then he started wrestling. He started getting real strong. He started getting big, and it was, like, all he did. So it was all he was doing for a little while. And, you know, you get to that point where you're getting ready to do high school sports. I was like, yeah, I want to wrestle. I want to be like Eric. You know, you mentioned like your brothers, right? Eric, no offense. I got to think at some point I probably surpassed you.
I'm coming for you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, he did it in high school. I did it in high school and college. And I did it in, and then I started doing jiu-jitsu. You know, and then I've been doing jiu-jitsu for about 7 or 8 years now. And so, I always thought that was like an interesting sort of like arc where you look up to somebody and they're doing martial arts. And then after a while, you're like, oh my God, I'm still doing this. They kind of quit a long time ago, you know? And then maybe they even kind of look back and like, oh man, I should have hung in there. I could have been like Matt, you know? So for me, it's kind of like in a weird way, like my practice of martial arts was like directly tied to my sense of growing up. You know, I was like, oh, I'm still doing this, and other people are kind of, you know, other people are probably actually growing up and going to like, you know, other people are probably actually growing up and going to like, you know, going to graduate school and you know, doing other more, you know, more wholeheartedly productive and interesting things. But for me, it was kind of like a coming of age thing where, you know, over time you realize that you sort of surpass the accomplishments of those folks that you looked up to, and you just kind of looking back and like, oh, okay, cool, you know. I remember when I was Alejandro Maciel, my dad. Okay, so we were at this barbecue, I think it was, and I had just started wrestling, and my dad came by. He's like, you know, it's all about boxing, because you know we're all Mexicans, we're all Mexicanos, and so Mexicans and boxing, right? All about, it's like, that's all about boxing. I don't know what you're hugging these guys on the floor for. I don't know why you're rolling around. You know, what do you? It's all about boxing. You want to learn to defend yourself. You want to learn to box. And I was like, I don't know, Dad. I think this wrestling stuff works pretty good. He's like, what would you do? What would you do if I came at you? You know, I was like, I'd take you to the ground and control you.
Take your skills away.
Yeah,
from you.
Yeah, and pound you out, probably, Dad. And
come at me, old
yeah.
man.
Yeah, it was kind of like a friendly thing, you know. It's like, I don't know about this wrestling thing, you know. There's no like tradition of like folk style wrestling in Mexico, right? And so we start, you know, my uncle Abdullah, and then Uncle Ruben, kind of goading them on, you know, kind of goading us all on. And before I know it, I'm like, kind of being goaded into like a little wrestling match with my dad, you know, at this.
Was he allowed to punch you?
No, no, he wasn't allowed to punch me. But he's just kind of like, what are you like? He's more like, you can't even take me down. You know, I was like 14, 15, you know, and I'll be darned, but I just like blast doubled him like right across the backyard. And I realized at that moment that my dad was human. Because, you know, I didn't mean to blast double leg him. I definitely didn't mean for him to fall back and twist his ankle the way that he did. I just, you know, he was telling me it was...
The wheelchairs
were but he, you know, he was limping for a little while. He was just telling me it wasn't going to work. So I was like, oh, I better put everything I can into this, you know. And he was unprepared for like the head in the chest blast double, you know, like right through the backyard. But it was one of those moments, I think in martial arts where you realize that like you also kind of have to be like a judicious steward of like your newfound abilities, right? Like you can't be out there in the streets just fighting somebody, right? Like you can't be out there seeking trouble, right?
This
like,
goes you really against hurt someone. What you're supposed to be doing as a martial artist.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
No, so, for sure.
That was the last time I ever tried to like prove something, you know, with martial art.
You felt bad. You know, your dad.
Oh
you're
my
like,
god.
This guy gave
oh
life.
My god.
I don't
dad.
Think I should have done that.
Dad, if you're out there, if you're like, I hope you're listening. You should be supporting my new venture, Dad.
He's talking crap on you. He's saying he beat you up, Pops.
Call him out for the rematch. Oh man, so you
my dad don't mess with me anymore.
Really? You jump on his back like a backpack, start strangling him.
Well,
like,
he used to whoop my ass 6 months into jiu-jitsu training. He was trying to mess with me and I armbarred him like a minute and he never wrestled me again, bro.
Oh my god,
it was funny because he used to whoop my ass. he used to never get anything on my paws.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's so funny. Yeah, that's a thing. That's an interesting thing. Right? And then you also see that, I think, in the gym, right? Like, there's cohort people that you start training with. Or maybe someone's a little bit ahead of you. But if you just keep your nose to the grindstone.
Nobody's ahead of me, dude.
Oh, my God.
No, I know what you mean.
But you know what I mean? It's like, oh, like, you know, someone's, like, maybe a little bit ahead of you, but you can kind of, like, and you can kind of be like, you know, I think if I keep my nose to the grindstone on this guy.
I just keep it outworking.
I keep outworking. Maybe like in a year or two, sure enough, you start winning the position. You start winning scrambles. You know, you start winning little exchanges. And then, you know, if you take that timeline and you stretch it long enough, sure enough, it's complete, utter domination. Like, they're not winning a single exchange. They're not winning a single scramble. They're not winning a single, like, they're demoralized before they even have to fight you.
It's that saying, that I was told, someone told me a long time ago, is hard work beats talent when talent doesn't want to work hard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's the truth.
Yeah.
You know? And like as a coach, you'd rather have consistency over talent any day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I can, you know, as a coach, you can teach someone to be great through their consistent hard work.
Yeah, yeah.
People with talent, if they don't work hard and they take it or for granted their gifts and they don't think they have to work hard, then they learn the hard way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So
I don't know if I got my point across.
I think so.
That's the truth.
You've worked harder than I think anyone I've ever seen. And one of the reasons that I wanted to have you
on—just not consistent enough, bro.
You're in there like it's church.
Yeah,
I see you in there. Every day. I can't throw a stone in that gym without hitting you.
I need to work harder.
You live there. You need to work harder.
Yeah, I do need to work.
That's
harder.
In your head.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. No, you know what though.
As hard as anybody. I try, okay, when I'm in the gym and I see champions training, I try to work harder than them. That's what I've always been.
It's no,
but
guys, I think some folks might just be picking this up out of context or just, you know, it's just appearing somewhere on, like, on my feed or on your feed or on Life in Jiu-Jitsu's feed and kind of might not know the backstory. So just to bring everyone up to speed, Matt is missing his left leg. All right, Matt is missing his left leg, DGAF, D D-gap, does not care, still goes for it. And that's kind of, honestly, that's part of why I wanted to have you on here. Like, you're inspiring, man. I've been doing martial arts for 13, 14, 15 years now. And you get to a point where, you know, for myself, I say, oh, God, I don't know if I need to do these warm-ups. Are these push-ups really going to make me any better? Is running in a circle really going to make me any better? You just kind of get fatigued of, you know, driving there, spending a half hour driving there, spending a half hour warming up, you know, just all the time that it takes, all the physical repetition, how it wears you down, thinking, oh, I'm a brown belt, I'm above this maybe, you know, and I think to myself, I don't need to do this warm-up stuff, I don't need to do these hip escapes, one more hip escape isn't going to make me better. And then I get there and I see you show up to the gym and I see you take your fucking leg off and start running with the rest of the group. And I'm just like, well, fuck, if I wanted to make an excuse, certainly, you know. Like, I don't know, Matt. Like, you, and you always have such a good attitude about it, too. You always have such a good attitude about it. You know, I hope I didn't put that, like, crudely or whatever.
No, bro,
it's an inspiration, man, because, like, it reminds me, and I'm going to go kind of like... I'm gonna go kind of like hippy dippy liberal on you. Okay? It reminds me to check my privilege. You know, it's just like, oh, like here I am crying because I got two legs and two arms and I gotta run in a circle again. So I want to get better at jiu-jitsu. Here I am, like, kind of, you know, just kind of over the warm up part and the conditioning part, just because I'm, you know, kind of like old man jiu-jitsu and I'm not like really a competitor or whatever. And here I am, kind of fatigued by how long I've been doing it and just sort of, you know, everyone, we all get those points, right? We're just kind of like, oh, maybe you didn't want to go that day. And then you see, you know, and not just yourself, you know, you see other folks come and, you know, Joy Pendle, who we're going to have, I think probably on Sunday with Liz Foster. Stay tuned for more on that. You know, Joy drives 2 hours from Stony Ford. She drives 2 hours from the mountains. You know, gets out of the car all stiff probably, starts running around, starts wrestling with everybody, you know? Then she gets in her car and just drives 2 hours back up the mountain. She does it. She does it every day.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what she does up there, actually? She's a beekeeper. Yeah.
Beekeeper? That's cool.
Yeah. They sell,
She sells her honey. She's the owner or she's just...
It's a family thing.
Yeah, it's that's a good business.
Yeah.
I know that much. I researched it a little bit, so I know she's a...
Yeah, my understanding is that...
Environment, too.
Yeah, yeah. It's super important for the environment. Yep. My understanding is that the... what they do is they sell queens to people. They cultivate queens and they sell those to folks that are making honey, you know? But, you know, 2 hours. 2 hours she drives up back and forth every day to train, you know? There's something kind of like uplifting and maybe not uplifting, but there's something that sort of like reminds you to check yourself when you see folks that are persevering, that are persisting through conditions that you don't have to, you know what I mean? And then like you're just like, I'm crying because I'm tired. Really? And then I get so mad at myself, you know? But, you know, another thing that I wanted to say about you, you're not like good at jiu-jitsu for having one leg. You're good at jiu-jitsu. you're a savage. You're a total savage, man.
Yeah.
How long have you been at it?
Since 2001. I've been competing with the top level guys. Started doing advanced divisions around 2006.
Okay.
So I was grappling, black belts, brown belts, purple belts, so on and so forth. Yeah, I started with Grappler's Quest. Local tournaments in Arizona, a few IBJJF tournaments. I always, for some reason, get disqualified when I do
IBJJF.
Yeah, some rules that I didn't know. I'm like, what are you stopping?
The leg or something.
This one dude, I was tapping this dude with the crucifix, and I'm looking up at the ref, and he's grabbing him. I'm like, I won. And then he holds the other guy's hand up. I'm like, what the heck? Like, I didn't even know. Like,
oh, my goodness.
So, yeah.
What was that?
It was...
Did you ever find out what it was?
It was... The submission I used?
Yeah.
It was something I called the... What did I call it? The gurney. I called it the gurney. It's like a Brock... Like the kind of what Brock Lesnar did on Frank Mir. But there's a YouTube video actually of me demonstrating the move I got disqualified for on YouTube. If you type in Matt Betzel, the gurney.
The gurney. Okay.
It'll come up.
Okay.
The exact move that I got disqualified for. It's a pretty good move.
Okay. Okay.
And the guy, the thing is, I didn't get disqualified at right away. First, the ref was like talking to the guy that tapped, and then he holds the guy's hand up. And then I asked the guy, I'm like, "What did he talk to you about?" He's like, "Oh, he wanted to see if I could continue." I was like, "You said?" He's like, "No." I'm like, and then I see him jumping around like, "You sure looked like you could have continued."
Yeah, he's like celebrating the disqualification.
Yeah, no, he just won. I don't know.
You know, in your heart of hearts, you know and he know that if that was a fight to the death, you would have walked out. You would have walked off the mat.
Exactly.
You know, he's alive because you let go.
Exactly. I had a kind heart that day, bro. No, and the way I look at it is like I wake up every morning with, you know, the way I am, and I have been since I was a kid. I don't know any different, and I just, you know, remind myself that, look, if I go my whole life and the worst thing that ever happened to me was I lost my leg, I did pretty good, you know?
It's not bad.
I did awesome. I guess. That's it. Yeah. And so I just believe that. And I believe my leg was taken to give other fighters in my weight class a chance to win. Or a chance, just a fighting chance.
There'd
because
be no
with two legs,
otherwise.
There would have been, there would have had no chance. So this is God's way of saying, here, I'm going to make it fair on the other guys that you're fighting. And for another reason, it's a tool for me to humble myself. And it's a tool for the world to humble themselves. And I also look at the same way people look at me. I look at people with wheelchairs, people that have mental illnesses, people that are just ignorant. I think ignorance is a disability. You know what I mean? I think a lot of the things that the media and society puts on our children is a disability. You know, I can go on what I believe is a real disability opposed to what everybody else thinks is a disability.
Got it.
If that makes any sense to me.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I mean, I think that we, Graham Greene has this line that stuck out to me. Graham Greene and the Comedians is probably one of the favorite books that I've read in recent memory. He says, "We envy in others the qualities that we do not have for ourselves." He says, like, you know, if you don't possess great humility, and you see that in somebody else, you might not have even realized what humility is like until you see it in somebody else. You know.
Who said that?
Graham Greene.
Graham Greene.
Yeah. And that's kind of the same. That's kind of the same the other way too. Like when you see people that have not yet conquered demons that you have perhaps wrestled with and dealt with already on your own. You know, I think, for example, maybe young men growing up, a lot of times feel like they have to puff their chest out and walk around and like act like they're somebody. That's an insecurity issue, right? And then maybe after you do a certain amount of martial arts or become confident in however, you know, in becoming a contributing member of society, right? You like learn how to just be comfortable in your own skin, and a lot of times that only comes with full adulthood. You know, it sure as heck was tough for me as a child. Once you've kind of gotten there, you like are comfortable in your own skin. You don't necessarily feel like you always have to prove yourself to others. Then you can kind of spot somebody who does feel like they have to prove themselves, and you're like, "Oh man, I'm glad I'm not there." Yeah, like I'm glad I'm not there. So I think I know what you mean. Where, you know, you see what other folks are sort of wrestling with on their own, and you can identify it because you've sort of wrestled with it too, and maybe have left it behind. But you know, we're all you know, I'm not religious, but also we're all like deeply flawed children of God. Right.
Yeah, that's my belief, but you know, my belief isn't everybody else's belief, and
I'm
not judging anybody.
Sure, and, sure.
Because at the end of the day, at the end of our life, right now, nobody knows, you know?
Sure.
Your belief, my belief has not been proven. You know, they're just beliefs. And, like, who am I to argue with someone on their beliefs that I can't prove true or false?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Did you ever see that South Park episode where they got to heaven?
I have not, no.
I think it was an episode of South Park.
When they show what God looks like?
Is yeah, he's the like one? The hippo or something.
And he's like some ugly ass creature.
He's like some hippo, yeah. No, but I think there was a scene where they asked him, like, so, what was the correct religion? And they're like, he's like, oh, let me look here, I forgot. He's looking through the book, and he's like, Baptist Lutheran, and then like all the Baptist Lutherans in the back are like, yeah, and then like the other people are like, oh, we missed it. Yeah, I mean, there's no...
Exactly. You know. Yeah, people argue about it. I'm like, it's a waste of energy and breath and time. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You're not gonna change someone else's beliefs. And like, why would you want to? That's what makes us, you know, the world we live in.
The differences kind of make it beautiful too, don't they?
Yeah.
The differences, you know, and go ahead.
Just different perspectives.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Different ways of life and different upbringings and teachings. It's like,
yeah.
Who knows? If I was taught to be this my whole life, I'd say your belief is, you know, it's what we are taught, you know?
Yeah. You know, so I hope this doesn't come off like a stretch, but you kind of get exposed to a lot of those different paradigms through jiu-jitsu also. By which I mean that you kind of are forced to examine the validity of your viewpoints. When you get tapped, or when you know, when you get dominated, ragdoll, right? Over time, as you become a more sophisticated grappler, your style comes out. You develop preferences at different points of the technique tree, the decision tree, right? You develop like, I want to go here because it's easier for my anatomy, because I know it better, whatever, right? Or you know, you become like kind of a, your decision making patterns start getting set in a way, and over time they work better and better for you, right? Because you get better and more skillful. But every once in a while someone will come along and just tap you with like some totally unexpected stuff, like from a completely different style of grappling that you weren't expecting, and you gotta think, well, like, have I been doing things the right way? Like, have I really been do I need to go back and like re-examine some of the things that I believed in? You know, for example, for me, I've always been a very like, you know, top heavy pressure wrestling type, you know, wrestle jitsu style of fighter. And it served me pretty well. Like, you know, I think I'm okay at it, but every once in a while, I'll run into somebody that just kind of, you know, hangs back. The good guard just waits for me to make a mistake. I'm so predictable with the pressure, you know? And so that sort of like made me stop and think a couple times, like, well, you know, maybe you're being a little bit too predictable with your pressure. Maybe you're like so hard-headed on always moving forward that people know where you're going to go. And so it's easier to set traps on you.
Is that Miyota Machida?
Yeah.
He said no preferences for a reason. It's because of that, I guess. You know what I mean?
There you go.
It's like, don't get set in your ways.
Yeah, I've gotten set.
Don't have any pattern. Don't have any rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
No, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Don't have preferences. Don't have your moves that you want to go to, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm definitely guilty of that. I definitely...
Take whatever they give you.
Yeah.
And just... Like that whole water thing Bruce Lee preached, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just formless. I know I sound corny, but it's so true. And that dude was so ahead of his time.
He was ahead of his time. Like, he was ahead of his time, yeah.
Says things that, like, I'm just learning now. Like, really? Oh, I know. Now I know what he was talking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, man, I just think, and also certain people have certain people's numbers, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They have that move, you know, really, you know, good who has, at, you know, and you're has, not good at defending, or vice versa, you
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just like...
You know who has my number? Mike Coffey.
My God.
Who's yeah, that? Mike Hoffman. Mikey, if you're out there, you've been mentioned in the podcast. Mikey, so I actually used to work with him over in the legislature.
Does he train with us?
He trains out of Lodi with Nick and Nate. And he's just built for fighting, man. He's like 6'3", 6'4", you know, 175 pounds. Very long and lanky. And
that's the body type for jiu-jitsu.
Dude, it's exactly, for sports, it's exactly jiu-jitsu perfect. And, yeah, you know. Yeah, he's Sikh, he does a lot of yoga. Doesn't lift any weights. You know, just keeps his arms long, keeps his tendons strong, does a lot of like isometric body weight exercises. You know, I lift because I like how it makes me look and how it makes me feel, but it's, you know, I think not the most useful for jiu-jitsu. But he's doing, dude, he does everything for jiu-jitsu. Like, everything he does is like super technical and perfect. I like to move around, I like to kind of be aggressive and like shuffle through positions until I start winning scrambles and move from there. He's just really good at slowing you down.
The methodical side.
Very methodical. I remember there was one time he grabbed onto a kimura, and I'm like, dude, I must have fought that kimura off for like 3 or 4 minutes.
Like, you're not getting it.
Well, yeah, it's like, you're not getting it. You're not going to get it. And I'm just like prying. His hands are like this big, you know. I'm like prying it off of me. Prying, you know, the kimura grip off my arm. Finally, after 3 or 4 minutes, I pried off my left arm. He just switches to my right. And I was like, oh my God, here we go again. So he's just kind of like, he's like a boa constrictor. He just kind of grabs a hold of you and drowns you, you know. Grabs a hold of you, takes you to the water, and just kind of drowns you, you know. Where, like, I hate being, like, constricted like that, you know. But there's a thing out there, like, certain people just have other people's numbers, you know. That's part of, I think, what it means to make peace with martial arts. Is to accept that there's, you know, there's some people out there who are just kind of always going to have other people's numbers, and that's kind of unavoidable, right?
It's avoidable.
You think so?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, you're just like, I think a lot of it's mental game, bro.
Yeah.
Could be mental. Could be he practiced that move more than you practiced the defense, then you just need to practice the defense more.
All right.
To smash that one move he gets you with. Unless he's getting you with like any move he wants, and he's like tell me what move you want me to tap. Then it's like you might have your hands falling out.
Oh my goodness.
But yeah, I believe they're just another man just like you, bro. Or you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have to believe that, you know? You have to believe that.
Yeah.
When you go in there, like he breathes and bleeds just like me. He gets tired just like me. He makes mistakes just like me, and I'm gonna make a mistake. You know.
There you go. There you go.
So like,
okay.
You know, I mean, every time I've lost, I think it was all in my head, bro. I don't think anybody's ever beat me because they're better than me. Never once in my life has anybody beat me because they're better than me. They beat me because they train more and train different. And I made mistakes. I didn't believe in myself. I didn't go out there 100. Whatever the reason is, it wasn't their fault. It was my fault I lost. If that makes, I mean, that's right. Just what I tell myself, and that's what I truly believe.
Do you, you know, we don't have to talk about this if you don't want to. Are there any losses where you look back and you're like, fuck?
Everyone.
But no, are there anyone, like, you know, something, but I mean, there's a thing where maybe it was too much too soon, right? Or you just weren't, like, that was too big a step up. And you can look back and objectively say, that was too big of a challenge so early in my career. But are there any ones that were, like, close? Where you're like, oh, if I would have just left, like, a little harder?
Yeah, I mean...
I'm sorry to say, to put it this bluntly, but tell me about your worst loss.
My worst loss? Yeah. Like, where I got my ass kicked? Or the ones where I thought I won?
Whichever one stung the most, like, in your heart.
Ooh, dude, they all sting, bro. They all haunt me, dude, that's for sure. I just, they're all horrible, bro. They're all like, PSD, you know what I mean? Type PSD.
PTSD?
Yeah, dude, that's it, yeah. Sorry, I get hit sometimes, but yeah, I mean, that's the truth. Like, I think they're all like, traumatic for me and emotional. I think the one that I learned the most from is from Freddie Lux, and God rest his soul, but he whooped my ass and he's made me a better fighter because of that. And then I think the other, my last three losses in a row, I think were all just me not pulling the trigger, or, you know, not finishing the fight like I should have, and mm-hmm. letting it go to the decision when it's just that close. I think those are more haunting than someone just whooping your ass. And you're like, dude, that dude whooped my ass, you know, rather than losing to a close decision. It's like,
that's what I meant. Yeah, that's what I was asking. Yeah,
those are the worst losses, where I would much rather the dude come out and whoop my ass and be like, hey, he just whooped my ass, you know, that's it.
Yeah.
Not like, I should have fought a little harder. I should have done this.
Or it's on you.
I should have trained a little different, you know? Mm-hmm. I should have believed more in myself, in my training, and went out there with more confidence and more emphasis on finishing the fight. Yeah.
That's so brutal. So when I was a junior. I was in the finals of the Mira Mesa Invitational. I think it's actually still going on. Down in San Diego County. And I had, like, wrestled my way to the finals of the tournament, and I met Stuart Cole from Imperial Valley.
This is wrestling?
Yes, this is wrestling. And Stuart, if you're out there, we gotta have the rematch. But, you know, this was like a case of man versus child. Like, he was just jacked at 16. You know, he was filling that singlet out. You know, he did. I remember looking at him and being like, he's
what weight class was this?
145.
Like, tough weight class.
Yeah, tough weight class at the time, right? Like in high school, everyone's 145, right? Like on the bell curve, everyone's 145. And I just remember thinking to myself, I looked at him, I was like, man, that guy is like really jacked. I hope he's not on my weight class. And sure enough, you know, he's in the weight class. He's on the other side of the bracket. And I get him in the finals. And I've always been a little bit of a cardio machine. So we get to it, and I actually get an early lead. I take him down. He gets back up. I take him down again. So I've got like a 2-point lead early in the first period. And somewhere in the middle of the second period, he evens the score. Take him down again. Can come back up. And somewhere towards the end of the second period, I just kind of start sputtering out. I just kind of start, like, the self-doubt creeps into the back of my head. I think to myself, man, this guy's really strong. You know, he's getting stride. Like, I don't know how long I can keep going at this pace.
That's mental, bro.
I don't know how long I can keep going at this pace, you know. Yeah. And then, you know, the third period, you know, typically, like, you defer your action if you want to, your choice for a position till the third period if you're able to. I chose bottom, and I was unable to escape from underneath.
And score again?
Yeah, I was unable to escape and score again. And, yeah, man, somewhere in the middle of the third period of my wrestling match with Stuart Cole, I just gave up. Like, I just gave up. And I was 15, and I'm at the time, and I'm 30 now. And it's still kind of in the back of my head. It's still in the back of my head. You know, I can't believe I gave up. Mark Tanaka. I hope I'm able to just say people's first and last names. Like, I actually don't know the laws around this.
Yeah, can't say my name right
now. Yeah, Mark Tanaka. God, that was the Scripps Ranch Invitational, I think. He just dominated me. He just dominated me, you know, from pillar to post, you know, from bell to whistle. He dominated me. And that was my freshman year, and that was another case of, like, that was a case of man versus child. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I was, like, 15. He was, like, 18. He got held back a year. He was still wrestling. I mean, he teched me. Tech is, like, they stop it because he's scoring so many points on you. They stop it out of mercy, you know? He teched me. I didn't score a single point on him. He teched me. And then he went to the parking lot. I shit you not. He went to the parking lot to check up on his kid. You know,
Wait a minute. Was his kid in the car? His kid, by himself?
No, his kid and his wife were like in an RV in the parking lot. Not his wife, his girlfriend, sorry.
So he couldn't bring them in?
No, they were with
He couldn't sneak him in the back door.
a lot of these wrestling tournaments, you know, those wrestling tournaments, you got to post up for the whole day. So a lot of the families bring like RVs.
Oh, all right.
They just kind of, it's kind of like a tailgate in the parking lot, you know. So, but yeah,
I had a whole other vision in my head.
No, like he's ashamed of the, no. It was like an RV situation, you know. The whole family, the families get into it, you know. They bring their RVs, they kind of hang out in the parking lot for these. Those wrestling tournaments are like, you know, 10 hours sometimes. I hadn't even kissed a girl at that point. You know, he texts me and goes to the parking lot to check on his kid. But you know, but that didn't bother me as much as like.
At least he's taking care of his family.
Yeah, that didn't bother me as much as that one where I felt like maybe I gave up a little bit here. You know, I still think about that sometimes when I'm like on the treadmill at the gym, like 15 years ago, Mira Mesa High School, you gave up.
That never goes away, bro.
It doesn't.
Nope, it does not. I don't care how many times you win after that, it's still
like, it's like a stain on you. It's like a
If I could just rewind time and get that one moment one more time.
Oh, I wish I would have tried harder. Oh my goodness. So all right, so you've told me the story. You don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, because you maintain veto powers over any topics of conversation, but it's a good story. You tell us how you lost the leg.
Okay. My mom and dad growing up used to have like people stay with us, you know, from the streets and, you know, from, you know, like out of prison and stuff and just try to help people out. Anyways, it was 1989, around like September, October-ish, they had this one guy come and move in from California. He was affiliated with this biker gang, and my dad used to work for this auto shop. They accused him of something that he did or did not do, whatever. And then basically he got fired, he left the job, and this guy was friends with them, who was referred to my family through other members of my family. And as a good person, right? So we'll open the door for him. He goes in a store. I remember him buying candy with my dad. My dad, they came out and gave us all candy. And when he gave me mine, he was like, "Here, Matt, here's this one's extra sweet." And I ate it. I got sick. I lost my leg. I had a blood clot, had a high fever, was hallucinating. Seeing things, you know, I was talking to people that weren't there. My mom and dad were freaking out. And paramedics came, pumped my stomach. I still was hallucinating, so they brought me out of the house. And I remember them carrying me. I remember them taking me to the hospital. Last thing I remember was having a thermometer put up my ass. And that's pretty much it, bro. You know, I woke up with my leg gone. That's what happened with my leg.
Oh my god. So this guy,
and I've said this story over 1,000 times and it still like gives me the shakes about it, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what happened.
So he poisoned you?
Yep, he poisoned me because I was, I guess the only thing we could think of is because my dad worked with me a lot.
Oh my god.
My dad didn't have favorites, but my dad spent a lot of time with me. I was always the most like my dad, so we got along really good.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that's the reason that he chose me over the other kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh my god, that's awful. That's awful.
Yeah, so it happened with me. I'm just glad that it happened when I was young. And not when I was just older and I was adapting and like I don't know any other way, so it's normal to me.
Yeah.
You know? I see pictures of me with two legs and I'm like, who's that kid? I don't know that kid. You know? That's how I feel.
Oh my goodness.
Because I think that made me a different person, you know?
Yeah.
Think it changed me.
Yeah.
Like lots of ways, like I'm still learning to this day, you know, of like why that happened, and it happened for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, who knows? Maybe I would have been a scumbag if I had two legs, you know? Maybe that taught me something that I wouldn't have learned with two legs, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe there's a lesson to be learned, and I believe
it. So this is pretty spiritual. Like, you firmly, you, like, in your heart of hearts, you believe that happened for a reason. Like,
yes, without a doubt.
This is part of, like, a divine plan. This is a spiritual...
Without a doubt. I also wonder if I would even be fighting if I had two legs.
Really?
For one, my financial would be different, you know? Not going to get into personal details, but certain things were set up for me because of the loss of my leg, which okay. I don't have to work a normal job like everybody else. I mean, I do have things that I make money with, but like...
Well, fine. I'm sure you're sponsors.
Yeah, well, that's not making money.
That's tough, yeah.
However, so I'm able to financially support my family because of the loss of my leg, and I'm able to go after my goals and be happier in life because of the loss of my leg. I'm able to dedicate my whole life to something I'm passionate about, like mixed martial arts or grappling, something that doesn't make a lot of money, which I wouldn't be. If I was in my current situation right now, I would have bills to pay, you know, with two legs, and I wouldn't have...
You'd be on a whole different grind. You'd be on a whole different hustle.
My whole path would have been completely different. So, who knows? Maybe there's something I would have done that was really bad, or something that I wouldn't have done that's really good.
Okay, okay.
Either path, you know?
Okay.
So that's how I have to look at it, and that's what I truly believe is the truth, you know?
Okay, okay. You, you ever have trouble getting opponents?
Oh, yes. It's a daily fight.
Tell me about that.
Well, I don't have trouble. My manager has trouble.
Your opponents are having trouble. I can get my ass beat by...
Actually, the universe has changed for me in the last 3 years. But, yeah. I'm not going to ever say it's easy to find fighters to fight me, but it's getting easier. I'm making more gain than I ever have. I'm proving my purpose in mixed martial arts and that I belong. I've proved that time, and I keep proving that. And so as I continue to do this and as I continue to go on my journey, more people's eyes are going to be open. Like, hey, Matt Bessel isn't a lose-lose situation fighter.
Is that what people say?
Matt
lose-lose?
Bessel is a champion. Matt Bessel is a beast, bro. And I hate to talk about myself in third person, but I'm putting myself in how everybody else is thinking, you know?
Yeah.
So the more I do this, the more I keep going and pushing from breaking down these barriers, the more people are going to want to fight me and going to want to, you know, get in there and try their style with a style that they've never fought before. Isn't that what martial arts is all about? Yeah. Fighting one style versus another style? Well, there's no style in the world that's like my style. So if you really want to challenge yourself and you're a flyweight, get in there with my style.
So you're still active. You're still fighting.
Oh, yeah. I'm never going to quit, man. And even when I quit, I'm going to make champions. If I don't get there, I'm getting someone there. That's a fact.
Okay.
That's how, but that's a, I believe that.
Okay. Do you
I'm already there, bro. I'm not even there, and I'm already there.
Do you have anything lined up coming up or a return date that you want to fight? Like a...
Yes, I have a fight in Phoenix, Arizona, August 19th. Cannot disclose the opponent. All I can say is he's from Arizona, and it's the first time I fought an Arizona fighter since 2001. So, because they're all scared, okay. I'm going to call it like it is.
So this is for like the king of the zonies, huh?
I know I'm better than 12th ranked fighter flyweight in Arizona, like they had me ranked. I know that. I know my son's fighting this Saturday.
Okay, okay.
Pancration.
Okay.
He's
Give him a shout out. Where are they fighting at?
My son's fighting,
what was he
at
fighting at
the Jackson Arena in McKellen Air Park.
Okay.
And the show starts at 1 o'clock for the kids, and then they have adults starting in the evening at I believe around 6.
Yeah. Full disclosure. I am. I'm on that card. I'm fighting Corey Layton of Carnage BJJ. Corey, I will see you there.
Yeah. Get it.
Actually, so Joy Pendle is on that card too.
Oh, right. Yeah. On. So I see you guys all.
Yeah,
up
I think
there.
It's kind of fun that they get the
I didn't know that was the same card. I saw
yeah,
the poster.
It's a Panda Cup.
Oh, right. On.
It's Anthony Bivens. Right. Anthony, if you're out there, Actually, I saw you earlier. I hope you're still with us. He's such a good dude.
He is. No, I love his family and him, man. They're good people.
I remember when I had my one MMA fight at the Chicken Ranch up in Jackson. I brought my sparring MMA gloves. So this was my first fight. I didn't know any better. And he's like, he's wrapping my hands up. He's like, all right, what are we putting over this? And I show him my sparring gloves. He's like,
your puffies?
Yeah, my puffy gloves. I show him my puffy gloves, you know? And, I show him these big red puffy gloves. He's like, dude, you can't go in there with that. Like, this is like,
you're gonna be hitting... I wish I would have been there. I can only imagine.
Yeah, he's like, you're going to be hitting this guy with pillows, you know? It's not effective. And I was like, oh, man. He's like, well, we got to get you some proper gloves. Without hesitation, he, like, gets up, pulls his wallet out, goes to the vendor booth, and, like, buys me a pair of gloves. I was like, dude, I would have gotten, like, I would have gotten to my car, you know, gotten these on my own. He's like, no, you're fine. I don't want you even thinking about it. Just put these on. Get ready to go. Dude, he offered to corner me.
And did he send you a bill later?
No. Actually, no bill Anthony, I owe you $35 actually for those gloves. I owe him $30. I just realized I'm in debt to
Text
Anthony.
Me if you want me to collect, bro.
Yeah, I should just Venmo him actually. But he, man, if you don't like Anthony, there's something wrong with you. You know, he's just that type of guy. He's such a good dude. At least he has been to me. You know, I don't know if someone out there is beefed with him. But he's been... and he's always been, like, so patient with me. He's kind of seen me go from, like, white belt to blue belt to purple, and gradually less hot-headed, I hope, you know. And he's just always, like, taking the time, let me show you this, let me show you that, let me show you this, you know. So I'm glad that he's, you know, promoting now. He's making moves, man. So your boy has got a pancreation,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I coach with him. I help one sometimes.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Your boy's fighting a pancreation fight. There's been some negative attention with regards to pancreation in the press. Would you explain the rule set for folks that aren't familiar and sort of why you think it's safe for your child?
The rule set's real easy. Basically, just like jiu-jitsu or wrestling, you get points for passing, taking down. Apart from those points, you also get striking points, high impact strikes, combinations, so but there's no head strikes, so it's MMA basically with no head strikes.
Okay, so no brain trauma, like no, you're still like protecting the kid from receiving like really brutal blows to the head.
Blows to the extent head, you can still get brain trauma, but yeah, there's minimal, right? They're looking at the minimal impact on the child's brain for development.
Sure.
So yeah. Yeah, just take the way the strikes. I think a lot of the concussions in combat sports is from
the strikes.
Yeah, slams, takedowns can also give concussions. However, they're minimized.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you want to talk the number one sport for concussions, I think in high school athletics, my understanding, it could have been an old study that I looked at, high school cheerleading. You know, these girls are getting dropped. These folks are getting dropped from like 4, 5 feet above someone's head. They get dropped. There's been some negative attention to pancreation in the press, but I'd say, you know, compared to what? You know, compared to high school football? Compared to cheerleading, where you're dropping?
Which the statistics are probably higher in injuries.
I'll bet.
I guarantee you. I bet money on it. I'm not an expert, and I haven't done the research to say one way or the other. But
you're pretty sure.
Pretty sure, yeah.
Yeah, me too.
For one, it's... larger range of people are doing those sports. There's a like 1%ers that are doing kids pancreation, you know?
Yeah.
That alone, I'm pretty sure that's a fact. On top of that, the refs are on it, you know?
Yeah. They're right there to protect the child.
Yeah, nobody wants
that's
to
not just
liabilities,
children doing, yeah.
You know, kids getting injured, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Lawsuits.
Do you feel like,
well, no matter what you do, you're going to have people saying negative things about it. And, like, if these people really, you know, cared about safety of others, they'd be talking a lot more about stuff rather than kids' sports. I think, you know, anything could happen.
You know,
when you just leave your house or whatever, you know?
Yeah, the most dangerous thing we all do is get in the car, right?
Sure.
But
Exactly.
I definitely think that there's something that has happened, or that is going on rather, where there's seemingly like no right way to raise a child. I am not a father. I do not have children. I'm not in, you know, I don't raise children, but you know, I'm around children. I'm around folks.
You're not
children.
Raising no babies, kids.
Yeah, I'm around, you know, folks with children. My coworkers have children, you know, like everything's always so controversial nowadays, you know, like, oh, there's
it's the pussification of America, bro. Like I said, was that, you know? Just,
yeah. Like, oh, should you let your kid play football? Maybe you should, maybe you shouldn't. You know, I remember we were at a water park. It's the Velocity Water Park up in Woodland. It's awesome. It's like they pull you from an aerial swing. And it's like wakeboarding, you know? And so, you know, my girlfriend Haley's daughter, you know, doesn't want to do it. We're like, oh, go ahead and do it if you want to. Go ahead and do it if you want.
Push
to.
Push her down.
No, push her. But we're encouraging her. You know, we're encouraging her to do it. You know, so we wanted to, like, you know, I don't think it's healthy for a child to believe that they can't do something. You know, and you know, she wasn't gonna get hurt doing this. It's, you know, it's wakeboarding. It's water, you know, and you know, just out of nowhere, someone in line butts in and says, "Don't make her do it if she doesn't want to." It's like, hey, bro, how much about you shut the fuck up and, like, let us
Did you say that?
No, I didn't say it, but, like, yeah. why don't you just back off and, like, let us speak to the, you know, let Haley talk to her kid, you know, to her child. Let me speak to this child that I know. You know, you're going to, like, weigh in and be an expert on how to, like, raise this kid now.
Yeah, okay, Dr. Phil.
Yeah, it's like this, like everyone, somewhere along the line, people got really, like, judgmental about how you raise a kid.
And most of them don't even have kids themselves.
Yeah, like, they became this, like community talking point where you say, like, oh, you shouldn't have your kid do that, or your kid shouldn't be doing it. Like, let parents raise their kids. You know, it's gonna be all right. Like, your boy's going to do pancreation. He's probably going to win this fight because I know who he comes from. But, like, don't anybody talk negative on that. Like, it's gonna be okay. You know, it's okay to be pushed.
And, I would like to see...
Within healthy limits. I'm not advocating that we go back to, like, Spartan days, but I just think that there's a certain amount of healthy development with being pushed, whether it be in martial arts, whether it be in dance, in piano, whatever. I just think it's healthy for people to face fears and to confront them if they want to do that. Yeah.
Without a doubt, like you said... They say negatives and negatives, but, like, I guarantee the positives of youth pancreation outweighs the negatives every time. Like, what would these kids be doing if they weren't, you know, in the gym training? Who knows? You know, what kind of the homes do they go to come from, you know? What kind of trouble are they getting into? What kind of trouble are they avoiding by being in the gym? You know, coming from firsthand, I'm a firm believer in combat sports being a great avenue for a certain type of kid. And, you know, builds confidence. It builds independence. Like, write some articles about the good stuff.
Yeah.
You don't see it. You're not going to see it. Why? Why? I don't know. I'm not the one that controls the media.
You think it's better for it to be controversial?
I think it's going to be more popular, yeah. If you got someone saying something negative about it, that's probably... Yeah, maybe ratings is a reason.
All right.
And then a feel-good story? You think that they don't want to tell you the positives because it won't get attention?
There's no story there, right? There's no.
That's horrible, bro.
Well, I mean, that's not a story, though, right?
That's, like, probably true. It's probably some truth.
This activity that your children are doing is perfectly healthy, and there's nothing to see here. Everybody move along. Yeah. There's no story, right? But it's like, you know children's pancreation can lead to paralysis? You know, everyone, tune in and find out. And then it's really, you tune in and it's really just a wrestling match. Like, what, so we're going to have kids stop wrestling? You know? It's crazy. Unfortunately, the truth of, I think, journalism and journalism and media, objectivity, what, you know, to be objective about something, That whole space of informing people on what's going on in the world, unfortunately, has to compete on TV with like sports, you know, and with like Law and Order. And so it has to be exciting to some extent, right? You have to want to tune in. And so we don't see enough written about the things that are going right. And we don't see enough written about like the very positive arc of progress of science and reason over superstition and tradition that the whole world is traveling. And there are, I think, you know, as Martin Luther King said, I think, you know, the arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. And so it's not really sexy, it's not really sellable, right, to tell somebody, you know, there was this great tragedy, but we're all going to make it. Don't worry, like, we're on the right path. I fundamentally believe that America, the world, society, people, I think it's all trending towards goodness, you know? But that's not a story. That's not a story, you know? So it's like, did you know that children can drown in, you know, hours after they left the pool? It's called dry drowning.
Worst case
scenario. Not that it's not a tragedy, but it's always kind of like this, like, we're like becoming, like desensitized almost to tragedy because it's so in our face now, you know, with media, that it's all like, we're like looking for new tragedies to be aware of and to be vigilant against. I also think that, you know, having a family and having the privilege to like raise a family in America is like such a beautiful thing. In other parts of the world too, but like, you know, having the privilege to like raise your child, you know, it's so beautiful that you, or it's even just like have a long-term partner. Like I have a long-term partner and it's beautiful. I get to like spend my time with her and I get to like make plans. But you also get to see how fragile it all is. You know, like here we are like making plans for the future. Here we are making plans for our future, for our children's future, for whatever. But also that's all contingent on this whole thing keeping going. You know? And so that kind of makes you realize like the fragility of it all. You know, and so you kind of become hyper. You want to protect it because it's, you know, it's our most innate human instinct to want to protect, you know, our own kind and our family, and so you we become hyper vigilant. You know, against like, oh, maybe we shouldn't have our kid doing pancreation. Maybe your kid should stay out of pools. God forbid they drown. You know, no high school football. We heard about
maybe
the concussions.
Maybe we should stay in our house.
Maybe we should stay in our house all day.
We'll be safe.
Yeah. You know. No, I think it's good to be challenged, to face the fact that the world is a scary place, and to overcome it, and to become more brave as a result. I think that's healthy, and that's something that you've done. We should wrap this thing up. We're getting at a little bit over an hour. Where can folks find you at? On Instagram, Twitter.
I have an Instagram at Matt Betzel, and a Facebook, pretty much.
Okay.
Matt Betzel.
Okay. And August 19th?
August 19th, I'm going to be reborn.
Okay.
At least that's what I tell myself.
All right.
Yeah, you're going to see a new exciting Matt Betzel.
I like it. This has been the first episode of Life and Jiu-Jitsu. Hope you've enjoyed the podcast. Tune in on Sunday. We're going to have Joy Pendle and Elizabeth Liz Foster. Liz is a female and she does jiu-jitsu. She's a purple belt. She teaches a women's jiu-jitsu class at Ultimate Fitness, I think, on Sundays, and she also teaches introduction to gi jiu-jitsu again at Team Alpha Male on Wednesdays. She's been doing jiu-jitsu for I think 4 or 5 years now. She's a champion at numerous tournaments, and Joy Pendle, you know, every bit the practitioner that Liz is. So join us on Sunday again. We're gonna have two more interesting folks on here who are gonna tell us about you know, doing jiu-jitsu as a female, what sort of unique challenges and opportunities that brings up, maybe why they got into it. Also just like wonderful personalities. You know Joy and Liz.
They're good.
They're awesome. They're
experts at what they do.
They are.
They're only getting better. So
yeah. So join us on Sunday. Hope you like the podcast. Like, comment, and share below. Thank you.
Thank you.